And welcome to another episode of that 401k podcast. Ari Rosenbaum along with Dan Venturi. Dan, hello. How are you?
I'm great, sir. I am great. Do you have a good, you having a good week so far?
Listen, it's, I don't know. I think the weather where it's like raining is like affected me somehow. I don't know how, but it has. So, not a lot of fun.
Yeah, we ended up, you know, Long Island's become Seattle the past few years.
Yeah, it's a lot of rain. I don't have to water my plants outside, so that's the only good thing about it. And my barrels are, my rain barrels are filling up with water. You know, it's, the weather gives good headache, as they say, you know. I have good headaches now. Hopefully, I think the weekend it's going to be a little warmer and it's not going to rain, so we got that.
Yeah, looking forward to a nice weekend.
Yeah, I got
to... can you believe, I mean, we're done with Denver. It's been, what, 45 days since that great baseball game we saw in Kansas City?
Yeah.
Where's the time going, bud?
Listen, it popped up last week. You know, it's a year since the first conference that we've done. And, you know, we've done already 10 since. You know, the Denver was like the 10th one that we did, or 9th one. 10th one will be Cleveland. So, yeah, it's really gone quickly. We've almost done this podcast for a year. We're at episode number 42.
That's so amazing.
10 episodes, and we'll have a year of this. Yeah, I mean, it goes quickly. I mean, when you're younger, you know, a year feels like, 20 years. And in when you're older, 20 years feels like a year.
It's not fair. It's just not fair.
Listen, 25, I mean, I graduated graduate college 25 years ago. I graduated law school 21 years ago. It doesn't feel like that, but it is. You know, when we were in Denver, I met up with a law school classmate of mine, Mira. So that was 22 years ago, but 21 years since my LLM class, my LLM degree at BU. So, I mean, you can't believe how quickly it's gone, but it has. I mean, you know, in some respects, that doesn't feel, but, you know, starting out as a young ERISA attorney working for a TPA, that feels like 40 years ago. You know, that you know, it's when it's fun-related, it feels like recently happened, but when it's something that wasn't fun-related, it feels like, you know, 50 years ago. You know. That's how I feel. But, okay, so Cleveland, September 20th at 401k Conference, Progressive Fields, October 11th, Foxborough, Massachusetts, Gillette Stadium, probably November the 8th, MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford, New Jersey. I always say Giants Stadium for a reason. It's MetLife Stadium. So you'll know what the colors are for the logo. It'll be blue and red. It will not be green and white.
Thank you. Thank God.
Yeah, and I'm sure there'll be a couple people who'll be upset about that. And Dallas, December 11th, AT&T Stadium, Arlington, Texas. So this week's topic, some really bad choices that 401k plan sponsors, you know, come up with, and it causes them a lot of trouble. We always have the usual suspects, so let's talk about the non-usual suspects. One thing I hate, drafting a plan document, I don't like to put plan sponsors in a corner and force them to do things unless they have to. And one thing that you see a lot of documents do, I don't think anymore, but I used to see a lot more, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, the stated matching provision. I think it's one of the dumbest things to put in a plan document. Forcing the hand of the plan sponsor, forcing them to make a matching contribution rather than just simply having discretionary provision and then just declaring it through a resolution. It's amazing that you still have plan documents out there that have a stated match provision. You know, you have to have a stated match for a safe harbor plan design, but that's safe harbor. But there's no reason that you should have a stated matching provision in your plan document. You're asking for trouble. I've seen, you know, you're making a discretionary contribution and you're making it mandatory. No reason for it unless contractually you had to do it, like a collective bargaining agreement or whatever.
No, I agree entirely. I mean, when we were writing plans as a consultant a few years ago, you know, it was always a discretionary match to this day, right? All of our plan documents have discretionary matches in them. You know, being more of a cynical kind of, having more of a cynical, critical eye, you almost wonder if some of these TPAs put these stated matches in just because, you know, churns business, right? If there's ever a change, well, guess what? There's another, you know, there's an amendment fee that needs to be ponied up.
Right. It's just, you know, it's just I've seen too many times when somebody would have a stated match and then they, you know, they couldn't get out of it, and you're forcing their hand. And I've been through in this business now, going to be 21 years come this September, and I've been around through two really brutal markets, 2000s and 2008, 2009, and when you have a stated match, employers run out of money. They have to suspend things, and when it's in your plan document and theoretically they've accrued a benefit, you can't take that away. It's just – I just think that you're, you know, creating more problems than it's worth, and there's no reason that you should have it. So that's just my two cents. And along the lines of matching contributions, another, you know – another bad choice is, it's really not a choice, but it kind of is. It's really the match true-up situation. And really, the match true-up situation is when you have a stated match, that comes up a lot. When you match one way and your plan document says something else in terms of the limit. Let's say, for example, you have a limit, you're going to do 100% of the first three of payroll period comp. And you match the – you actually give the allocation at the end of the year. That's a headache because you actually – to do it – to properly do it, you actually have to make that calculation on the payroll period. And, you know, what you find out with solid deferrals is that many participants change their allocation of deferrals, their deferral percentage. Some max out at the beginning of the year. Some max out earlier than 12/31. Some people change because they can no longer afford, you know, something popped up in their lives or something positive popped up in their lives and they can afford to put in more. The match true up is a big problem when your plan document or your practice is to match on, one period of compensation and you're allocating it based on another. So, when you're doing payroll period comp as your limit and you're allocating it on an annual basis, that's a problem, or vice versa. And it's an administrative headache. A lot of times TPAs don't realize that they actually had to make it. And even if they do, they do it wrong.
Yeah, well, we don't touch those. I mean, to your point, they're messy. We'll do true ups in the traditional sense to catch those folks that put a bunch of money in at the beginning of the year, but you accrue on a per payroll, but you pay out annual. Those are just recipes for disaster because no one ever gets the math right, and it's a big preventable time suck of an exercise that we just can't do. So if that's on the shopping list for a plan sponsor, we tell them that product's no longer available.
Yeah, it's a recipe for disaster. You know, it's sometimes you ask for trouble when you have something like that, and the stated match and the match true up are things that you can avoid, and you can avoid it by practicing what you preach. You know, so if you're going to do a limit on payroll period comp, well, you know, why don't you allocate on a payroll period? Make our lives easier when it comes to plan administration and following plan documents and, you know, that sort of thing. And, of course, one of my favorite headaches, I don't know if there is such a thing, multiple plan loans. We shouldn't have that. But, you know, we have that. I mean, I had clients when I was working at a TPA, when I was working at Geller Group, we had this carpet manufacturer. Apparently they made very, very fancy carpet, you know, not like, you know, the stain-resistant carpet. I mean, really, really fancy carpet. And they had a plan, and they had, like, people with 7, 8, 9 loans. And one of my favorite stories is that when we took it over, we put in one loan outstanding. And that was what we put in the new plan document. And apparently our system wasn't updated to include that. So when the plan came over, somebody called out about a loan. And the person had multiple loans, and the person on the call said, "Oh yeah, your plan has unlimited loans." The advisor to the plan heard about it and flipped his lid and said, "What the heck happened?" And of course, our conversion person, Norma, who with Norma, you actually had a watch and behind your back, because you know eventually there would be a knife or a shiv, and she said, "Oh." It was drafted without, you know, a limit on loans, which was a lie. She just never bothered to update the system. And the funny thing was, you know, if it wasn't updated in the system, the plan administrator had no idea. I used to joke, you remember there was a Chris Rock line. I don't want to tell the joke because it's, you know, kind of tasteless. But I used to joke, if you wanted a plan administrator, if you want to hide something from a plan administrator, just put it in the plan document file. So that was based on a Chris Rock joke about, you know, getting robbed. Put it in a book, whatever, with a certain group of people. So I used to joke, we put in the plan document file, they'll never find it. And, you know, people, my friend Richard Larita got irate because he knew that she threw me under the bus and we drafted the plan document correctly and whatever. And that's why I got back at her many years later with an article called The Norma Principle, which is about how certain employees, no matter how incompetent they are, they still stick around because, you know, they have a boss who looks out for them for some reason or another. So the multiple loans is a big problem because got a lot of plan errors with that. TPA may pay off some loans and let other loans default. And if you have a defaulted loan, you know, you haven't paid quarterly, well, you have a distributable event. You have a deemed distribution. It's a taxable distribution, and you know, who the heck needs it? You know,
for those of you keeping score at home, Norma is not to be confused with our good friend Lois. This is a completely different incident.
Lois is an attorney, and Norma's not. The multiple plan loans is a real. Big problem. And it's one of these big headaches. And, you know, to cut back on the potential for abuse and for mistakes and distributable events and defaulted loans, you have one loan outstanding. And that's all you need. And there's no reason why you need 20 loans. This isn't some pay, you know, a 401k plan should not be a payday loan service.
Yeah, or an ATM machine.
Exactly. $1,000 minimum loans, one loan outstanding. Move on. Nothing else to see here. No other reason to have it.
That said, you and it happens to me all the time. You've got participants that will pay down a loan, you know, with a smaller balance, so they can just take out a bigger loan, you know, as soon as it's paid off.
Right. And next on our hit list, bad ideas. Out of the box compensation definition. Listen, W-2, if that's what you pay, that's what you should use as your plan loan, plan level compensation, the definition. That's my opinion. Anything out of the box, it likely is going to get screwed up one way or the other. Matt, you know, listen, let them defer on everything. Let them, you know, let them get a contribution on everything. Once you're going to be cute and decide, oh, you know, I'm a car dealership, I'm not going to pay on the car allowance. It's when you run into trouble, because the reason, you know, we run into trouble with these out-of-the-box compensation definitions is because the plan sponsor assumes one thing and the plan document says another. Or, you know, or somebody's administering it incorrectly. And it usually happens when you have a definition of compensation that is out of the box. Everybody who uses W-2, listen, they're going to less likely have problems than the guy who's going to exclude sick pay and bonuses and moving expenses and whatever it is. And let's not forget that, you know, if we exclude certain parts of compensation, you know, it could be discriminatory if it really negatively impacts non-highly compensated employees. So there's no, you know, I always say with plan administration, keep it simple, stupid, KISS. That's what I follow. You know, years ago, I remember reviewing what another risk attorney based in San Diego was doing on a match provision. And it was just the way it was drafted. I said, I understand what he was doing, but good luck trying to administer it. I think that when you try to be cute and fancy with something very, very special, it always blows up in your face. And I like plain vanilla. When it comes to ice cream, I like chocolate. But when it comes to plan provisions, I like plain vanilla. Because something exotic isn't going to screw me up. Now, if I go to Baskin Robbins, I know I'm not going to have vanilla. I'm going to have something chocolate-based or something coffee-based. I like coffee ice cream, but I don't like coffee. That's how I roll. But, you know, when you ask for trouble in plan administration, you will get it. And that's why, you know, you shouldn't have a stated match. That's why you shouldn't have multiple loans. That's why you shouldn't have these things. And people say, well, this is why we don't have nice things. I don't know if, you know, an out-of-the-box compensation definition is a nice and wonderful thing. I think it's just you're asking yourself for trouble. If you ask me.
Oh yeah, and much as in life, you look for trouble, and usually it finds you.
You know, it's like walking in a dark alley. You get attacked. Yeah, you know, you didn't deserve to get attacked, but you know, somewhere you made a decision that puts you in harm's way.
Precisely.
It's not your fault, but you've increased the risk. You know, like don't drink the liquor in Dominican Republic. You know, that's a risk. You know, people want to take
water in Mexico.
Water in Mexico. You know, there's certain places. Back as a kid growing up in Brooklyn, there's certain places you wouldn't want to go out at night. Now it's a little bit different. Now you can pretty much go everywhere. There were some places you wouldn't want to go in broad daylight, but that's changed. But, you know, again, don't ask for trouble. With plan administration, you can get it. And talking about trouble. The number one biggest trouble that we have now in 401k plans is what I talk about in my presentations, which was covered in 401k Specialist Magazine. They mentioned my airplane presentation. It's the deposit deferrals. I just got a no change letter on a DOL audit that went on for about 3 years on deferrals for a restaurant group that you guys all know. Multiple locations, a very, very famous restaurant chain. And, you know, this is dealing with a company that had multiple payroll providers, multiple locations, and late deposits. And late deposits is probably the number one on the hit list in terms of compliance issues that 401k plan sponsors now have to deal with. And we talk about this ad nauseum on this podcast, don't we?
We do. And we'll talk about it all the time.
And we'll talk about it until the end of time, until plan sponsors, you know, when we, I think the day when we work, we rid the world of poverty and homelessness and hunger, we'll also eliminate the day for late deferral deposits. Not to say
that'll
that late deferral deposits.
That'll be one hell of a day.
And not to say late deferral deposits are on the same level as hunger, but I'm just saying that's nearly impossible to eradicate, like hunger. People will be late. People in HR sometimes are asleep at the wheel. They forget that they need to deposit this money as soon as possible. But, yeah. You know, it's a big, big to-do. And it's causing a lot of headaches for a lot of the plan sponsors that I work with.
Yeah, well, and you know, I think those 5500s, you know, that are filed, they end up in a separate pile. The ones that have late contributions and all the other ones when they're reviewed. And you know, I think those are the piles, and you talk about this all the time, that those independent audits get pulled from.
Right.
So just stay away from trouble.
Exactly. You know, deposit those deferrals, you know, in a, you know, a timely fashion. Don't wait till the 15th day of the following month. That's bad reg. That don't apply anymore. Get in as soon as possible.
And I love that. That's one of my favorite things.
What?
So the reg is still on the books, but it's nowhere near enforced. It's almost ignored. It's the exact opposite.
Well, yeah, it's because it's like, well, we really didn't mean that. We really mean as soon as possible.
But then change the law, right? I don't get it.
Who are me to – listen, I'm still waiting. It's 7 years for, you know, MEP MEP regulation.
Our good friends, our good friends in Tennessee, we have to thank for that.
Well, listen. I got in trouble with that 7 years ago, and I said, why would you go and get an advisory opinion on that? And, you know, the answer from the attorney was, oh, it's a $1 billion 401k plan. We need to do that. No, you didn't.
No, you didn't. No. I don't think it was $1 billion either.
Well, he claimed that it was. We
worked with those guys. There was a lot of windage in that number.
There's a lot of windage, and that attorney has never been the same ever again.
He will go down in infamy.
I don't know about that. I wouldn't put him on you know, the same level as Pearl Harbor. But it did cost us all a lot of money, Vinny. I had this TPA there where we're working on the maps. Oh, I'm gonna make you a lot of money. We had everything going. We had a 403B map ready to go, and then boom, one May day. You know, whatever.
Yeah, May 12th, May 10th, something like that.
I think it was May 12th. You should remember that, you know, remember that like the day my grandfather died? I don't know. Anyway, last but not least, we talk about it all the time, picking TPA that isn't very good at TPA work. And that's always going to get the plan sponsor in trouble. And they don't really realize it. They think, oh, you know, TPA makes a mistake, it's on them. No, it's on you. Mm. You're the plan administrator, third-party plan administrator. You know, it's a problem. You know, they're a third-party administrator. You're responsible for it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one of the craziest things about this industry is one, anyone can be a TPA, right? And two, generally, most providers, most record keepers, at least, I'll engage just about anybody that represents themselves as a TPA. You know, whether or not you're you know, and I'm going to totally take the opportunity to bring up, you know, our friends that dabble in multiple identities as an example of you know, providers not really vetting TPAs. I mean, you don't know what you're going to end up with. So it's incumbent upon the providers to protect their client and make sure that they pick a TPA that is reputable, has a track record, has some, you know, can provide referrals.
Yeah, listen, I right now I'm going through with a client where it's a DB plan, defined benefit plan, and the Schedule B apparently looks like it might have been signed by the actuary after he died. I don't know how this happens.
Damn.
Aside from fraud, maybe time machine. I don't know. Yeah.
Let's go with time machine, and let's find out how they did it.
You know, the one of my favorite stories about time travel is there's a ABA player named Marvin Barnes. He played with the Spirits of St. Louis. And I think it was like, you know, between Kentucky and, I don't know, Tennessee or whatever. Kentucky and Virginia, I think, was the plane ride. When you travel into Kentucky, it's an hour difference. You go into Central Time. And it looked like, you know, he was going to get on the plane in Virginia. They might have been playing the Squires or whatever it is, the Virginia Squires. And it was like, you know, you're leaving at like 8:01 and then you're arriving in Kentucky at 7:58. And Marvin Barnes looks at the ticket. He says, I don't know about you, but I ain't going to go through any time machine. So, you know, maybe that actuary went through a time machine. I don't know.
There you go.
You know, what they say in Star Trek VI, you know, no matter how implausible, you know, you have to look at the implausible. You know.
But that was a Spock line, right?
Yeah, that was the whole thing with the, you know, who are the gunmen and all that kind of stuff. And they came up with the fact that a Klingon bird of prey could fire when cloaked, which never happened before.
Now, or might not have happened since.
Well, yeah, they blew up the prototype at the end of the movie. Target that explosion and fire. Very good acting by Shatner.
Who is 80-something years old?
Yes, who will be at a show in August that my son and I are going to, a baseball card show. He will be there in August, so I'm going to have to see Shatner.
Oh, yeah, you have to see T.J. Hooker, Captain Kirk. And, you know, he's been doing Priceline now for a really long time, too.
Kelly Cuoco is taking that over, but he owned a piece of Priceline. He got, like, a lot of shares, and for a short time it was worthless, and now it's worth millions and millions and millions of dollars.
Oh, that's good for his family.
And, of course, he was an airplane, too.
Yes, he was.
Yes.
Yes, he was. With the Doors, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Such an underappreciated movie.
Yeah, it's because the Zucker brothers weren't in it, and it was basically a retreat of the first movie, but it had its moments.
It did.
So, anyway, I think that brings another broadcast to an end. So, until next time... Dan and Ari saying so long, farewell, auf Wiedersehen.